Good morning. I'm going to pull this down, kind of. Good morning, everybody. My name's Victoria Whitehead. Messer Whitehead. I am the general counsel at the High Plains Water District. There at the High Plains Water District, I handle all of our internal and external legal affairs, but predominantly I work in water law and policy. I spend a large portion of my time in Austin working with legislators, particularly urban legislators, educating them on irrigated agriculture and on what we at the High Plains Water District do within our 16 counties. That started way back. I'm sorry. Give me one second. I did a Prezi because even though I'm a millennial, I'm trying to be up with the newest and latest technology. But so y'all may give me a little bit of grace. I tried to add in some fun things like some videos to help with the presentation today. So as with any legal presentation, I know you guys hear from Tiffany Lashman a lot as well. As an attorney for the district, please know that even though I may give you some suggestions within this presentation, we are not creating an attorney-client privilege. I'm happy to help you find somebody if you've got a situation where you're needing some legal expertise, but this in no way creates that. But let's go ahead and dive on in. So kind of what's on tap today? I really wanted to take this opportunity to kind of get you guys up to speed on where we're at with certain policy topics and bring them to you from where they're at within the groundwater world. So either they're going through the court cases or we're talking about them in Austin. So we're going to talk about GCD permitting across the state. Groundwater in the courts, we've got some state cases and some interstate cases that could play a role in even what we're doing within our region. And then also have a little bit of a discussion, it's kind of a policy talk, on brackish groundwater. To give me an idea, though, how many of y'all live within the High Plains Water District? Okay, and how many of y'all live outside the water district? Okay, so that kind of helps me out just a little bit. So we're going to dive on in, and I'm going to run and touch this if you can't, but here's our first little clip. These videos aren't working today, but that's okay. But that was Ron Swanson, if any of y'all are familiar with him. He's got some very interesting takes on government and what government should and should not do. But just kind of a reminder about GCD authority. So when we're in Texas, if you are not within a groundwater conservation district, the governing rule of law is the rule of capture. If you are in a groundwater conservation district, while technically speaking, the rule of law still says rule of capture is present, the rule of capture is modified by the rules of the groundwater conservation district. So I'm going to have to move this around just a little bit because I got to look. So while many GCDs are within aquifer regions, most GCDs over an overlying aquifer have similar rules within those aquifer regions. Just kind of a friendly tip for those of you that aren't in the High Plains Water District, or maybe you're looking at land purchases or water sales in other groundwater conservation districts. The best way to figure out kind of what a groundwater district's authority and rules are is to look at their enabling legislation. Because while Chapter 36 of the Texas Water Code kind of sets out this big toolbox and rule book of how groundwater districts are supposed to manage the groundwater resources, enabling legislation trumps that. In a lot of instances, too, what that enabling legislation does is it takes into consideration local resources and local use. So in particular, for you guys, local ag use has a ton of exemptions across the 100 groundwater districts in Texas. So some things to look for, ag production exemptions, ag production fees, especially reporting requirements, things like that. But kind of going back into this Chapter 36 talk, and this is going to play into when we kind of dive into some of the policy discussions that are going on today. There are a variety type, like tons of different types of permitting going on in the state of Texas. So in those 100 groundwater conservation districts, these are generally the permitting structures that you'll see. Most of you guys are familiar with spacing and production. So think the High Plains Water District's rules, 1.5 acre feet per acre. You have groundwater districts that play into use type permitting. We have reasonable use. So you come to me and say, I want to do X. I will give you a permit of what I think is a reasonable amount to do that. There's beneficial use. You tell me what you want to do. I'm going to give you a permit for the most amount to where you get the most benefit for that use. And historical use. You come to me and tell me how much you've historically used. I give you a permit that says you can do what you've historically used. Nowadays, we're also seeing a huge transition into updating permitting structures to take into consideration more of a scientific-based permitting. So let's do an impact analysis or a data look. So you tell me, I want a 300-gallon per minute well. I have 5 acres. We know what's surrounding you. I do a core impact analysis on what I know of the aquifer and say, okay, well, based on what you're wanting, this is where you can put it. So a lot of variety. And honestly, most groundwater districts have a combination of the above. High Plains Water District, for example, I tell people we have a correlative rights hybrid type system when I talk with people in Austin because while we are spacing in production, our spacing is based on kind of impact analysis, so moving further away from neighboring wells to help limit the impact. But we've also got historic use considerations compared to our other groundwater districts in the Ogallala region that do production. You know, for us, 1.5 acre fee is what it takes to grow a crop, for example. So there's considerations that go into play with those. I will say an amazing resource that is out there, if you want to dive in and look at, or you're looking at land, say, down in the Abilene area or out further west, Wichita Falls, the GCD Index by the Texas Alliance of Groundwater Districts is a great resource. You can go on there and click. It's an interactive map, and you can find information on groundwater districts and their permitting, their structures, things like that. So kind of diving into permitting legislation, we're going to talk about the one bill that passed that does affect permitting here in a little bit, kind of in the brackish discussion. But some bills that I want to talk about, they failed to pass the system, but they are truly not forgotten. These are things that we are going to see come back up again in interim discussions and again when we come into the next legislative session. The first is a rules petition bill by Cody Harris, real great legislator, Farm Bureau guy, House Bill 2123. And what this does was it was a rules petition bill. So allowing anybody to file a petition with the groundwater district to initiate a rules proceeding. The pros and cons on this, pro, it's landowner friendly. It puts the rulemaking process back in the hands of the landowner. Cons, there's 1,000 other ways we can do this that are already in statute right now. So what this was trying to do is make groundwater districts a little bit similar to state agencies who have this type of provision, but arguably state agencies don't have some of the other measures that groundwater districts have when it comes to the rulemaking process. Similar rules by Senator Perry is Senate Bill 1010, and what this would require is groundwater conservation districts that are across a similar aquifer region would be required to have similar rules. And really what this is trying to address is, for example, say Hale and Floyd County were in two different groundwater conservation districts. Hale County has the same rules as High Plains Water District, 1.5 acre feet per acre. And then Floyd County came in at a different time, has different enabling legislation, and their permitting is historical use. So say my farm on the one side of it, in the Floyd County side, I've got a well where I've been able to produce 900 gallons per minute, and I've been doing it for years, and I've got a pecan orchard, and I've been blah, blah, blah. And then I've got 1.5 acre feet per acre on the other side of my farm. Well, what this is saying is it's unreasonable for us over this same aquifer, because the aquifer doesn't change on one side of the farm to the other, for you as a landowner to be subject to two different rules. This one's not going to go away. It's going to be a continued discussion. It's really not a huge issue up in our neck of the woods. Us in the Ogallala region in particular, we have very similar rules. But when you're getting down in South Texas, some of the groundwater districts down there have these types of situations going on. So we monitor this stuff because, you know, we don't want it to negatively hurt and affect us, but it'll come back up. This next situation, we've got House Bill 2122 by Harris and 2249 by Lucio. And I bring this up because we're going to keep talking about it. But also, I would love to know if there are people in the audience who could be a resource for me when we're talking about this situation, because you guys all produce here in West Texas, but you guys all have small towns who may be in these types of situations. So what this bill says, and I'm going to tee up the situation for you, this, for example, is the city of Lochney. This is the city of Lochney city limits. All the green dots are the current production wells in and around this area. This is not the city of Lochney's current situation. This is my disclaimer, but I used Lochney because it was close by. So what this bill says is, for example, say the city of Lochney has two wells within their city limits that they have used. They permitted back in the 60s. That's been their water supply. Those wells are no longer able to be used. But at this time, they are completely landlocked. Say all the landowners within this region, A, don't want to sell their water to the city of Lochney, B, don't want to lease their water, things like that. Like, Lochney is landlocked. They have to go outside of this region to get a well. So the Lochney City Council goes and buys a plot of land right over here. So they have to take a huge investment to pipelines out here, up here, and they drill a well. And they only buy, say, a quarter of an acre to put that well on there. What Representative Lucio is saying is this poor town, rural water supply, I mean, they don't have the resources to pay for buying, say, a whole section of water rights. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, from this little plot to this here, we're going to count in their acre foot per acre production the entire, this is about 3 square miles in the city of Lochney. So from this well, I'm going to allow 3 square miles of 1.5 acre feet per acre, but all these neighboring landowners are still subject to the High Plains Water District rules. So Senator Lucio's bill, Representative Lucio's bill was saying, yes, we're going to require groundwater districts to do that. They have to do that. Representative Harris's bill was kind of the opposite side, and it was Farm Bureau language that said, well, if you're going to do that, you need to come over here and lease all the water rights around here, because inherently you're draining. So what this situation asks is, we know what the property right is. We know in day it says you own the water below your land. But are we, through policy, growing or shrinking a property right based on regulation? So we'll deal with this coming up. You know, there's a lot of great resources that municipalities have. Director Jackson's here with the Water Development Board. There's a lot of options. For my 16 counties, I have yet to have a rural water supply corporation tell me that they can't afford to buy the water that they need. Out here in West Texas, what I'm told, I mean, we understand the value of water, and we know we got to buy it. We've had forward-thinking city councils. So if y'all know, or you have your local city dealing with something like this, I'd love to hear about it. Next up, we're going to kind of transition over and look at some notable court cases that are going on, just kind of some things to keep on in the back of your mind. We have two big ones in particular. We have Cockrell versus Middle Pecos, GCD. Call this one the Battle of the Billionaires. So you've got two billionaires, literally, down in the Middle Pecos area who live right next door to each other. One wants to sell his water to the city of Midland and oil and gas operations, and the other one wants to preserve the water for his pecan orchard. So we've got a lot of legal issues coming in here. One of the bigger ones that's kind of a reason why we're still monitoring this is who has standing to contest a groundwater district permit. Middle Pecos GCD has kind of fallen in the middle between this fight between two guys. The latest on this is both parties entered what we call a Rule 11 agreement. And basically what this is the parties telling the court, like, hey, we're going to abate this proceeding. We're going to put it on hold. We're going to agree to monthly discussions. All the attorneys in Austin hop on the plane, fly out to Midland once a month, or Pecos once a month, and they have these discussions. But what's being left behind is some questions that we have in case law when it comes to standing. The other case it's been going on for quite some time, but we've got some notable changes coming out in 2018, is the Fazino versus Brazos Valley GCD. And what this is, you had the city of Bryan College Station, catty corner to the Fazino family. The city of Bryan College Station was given a permit for production. The Fazinos are claiming that the permit that was given is too large and inherently is causing drainage on their properties. excuse me. This case has like completely run the gamut of groundwater law and every option possible that a landowner has when it comes to litigating water rights. They contested it. They had hearings at the district. They had hearings at SOA. They had hearings at Robertson County and in the Western District of Texas. So basically, they've kind of gone all through this process. The courts have said, Brazos Valley, what you did was fine. You gave them a valid permit, and everything's good. What we do have, though, is the only issue that's still remaining is a $100,000 takings claim. And this takings claim is being brought out of the Western District Court, and so it's in the federal process. So this takings claim was appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals back in March. I'm sorry, I didn't put that date on there, but back in like the March time frame. And so what they're doing here is they're taking a oil and gas based argument in federal court, asking, was there a takings and oil and gas kind of draining style question? So while we as groundwater districts and most people in Texas who own property rights would love to know the extent that oil and gas law applies to groundwater pumping, we're in federal court, and federal court doesn't have a ton of jurisdiction over a state constitutionally granted property right. So a lot of people, a lot of very experienced litigators are saying we're really not going to get anywhere with this. But it's still something to just keep on your mind. And this next case, it really does play a role and hit home to the High Plains Water District. We have LULAC versus the Edwards Aquifer Authority, League of United Latin American Citizens versus Edwards Aquifer Authority. But what this case does is it looks at the Edwards Aquifer Authority, which is a groundwater conservation district down in the San Antonio area. And I say groundwater conservation district, it's kind of not. It's subject to its own code, and it has different things because it was federally created. But generally speaking, it has implications to GCDs. But what this is saying is, does the Edwards Aquifer Authority precinct map violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment in Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act? And to set this up, the EAA has a 17-member board. So 15 of them are elected, 2 are appointed. 4 come from Western counties, 4 Eastern, and 7 are in Bexar County. So that kind of looks like this. Generally speaking, in this neck of the woods, the water does not come from inner city San Antonio. They pipeline it in through the Vista Ridge Pipeline or other resources and clean it up. This neck of the woods and kind of out here, not necessarily on I-35, but is still ag-based production, landowner production. So the courts We'll come back to that in a second. So the courts are kind of implementing this analysis. When you have a government entity and that government entity has an election, generally speaking, the apportionment of the election has to be one voice, one vote. So equal representation across, like, for example, we in Texas in our House of Representatives, you have about 150,000 people per House district. So it's equal across. So the only way that you can have a government authority that does not have one person, one vote type protections, if it meets this Slayer-Ball analysis. It's a huge case law section. But we've got the two-part analysis. One, does the government authority have a special limited purpose? And two, does its apportionment scheme bear a reasonable relationship to its statutory objectives? So what the court held is that the EAA does have the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is really good level that we've gotten to. It does have a special purpose. Its sole purpose is to manage groundwater within this area and to protect endangered species. It doesn't get into the basic government functions that most government entities do, like taxing, policing, water. I mean, like all the other stuff that your government entities do. I kind of get a little anxious when they talk about the taxing part in this case because we do tax. But and then the other part is, does it bear a reasonable relationship to its statutory objectives? And one of the statutory objectives was to balance out agriculture production with the growth of the city of San Antonio. And you can see having 8 district representatives outside of San Antonio and 7 in San Antonio helps provide that balance. So I pause and tell you, I show you the High Plains Water District's precincts. So we operate in 5 precincts, generally speaking. But had this case not been upheld a couple months ago, we would likely have 2 representatives from Lubbock, 1 from the city of Amarillo, 1 from the western half, so all of these counties, and 1 all of these counties. And I don't know about you, but I don't know how many people in urban Lubbock and Amarillo really understand your ag production and water use. So it was a big case for us. I think it's a big case for ag and ag production, and we'll continue to follow it and play a role in that. And finally, just some intrastate cases. I know you guys hear about these, so just wanted to give you kind of a little bit of an update. We've got Texas versus New Mexico. Y'all have heard about this many, many times, but this is the water dispute going south of the Elephant Butte River, all through the groundwater pumping of the pecan orchards to the Rio Grande Valley. The biggest notable change here is we had some special master action in June of 2019, which, if you are a Supreme Court geek, which I am not, but if you're a Supreme Court geek, kind of some of the triggers that have been happening means we are likely, this is kind of a stop mark to know that we should start seeing oral arguments on this case in the next year, year and a half, which is good for the state of Texas. 2 other ones. I know y'all know all about WOTUS and the Clean Water Act, but Hawaii Wildlife Fund versus County of Maui is actually up in the Supreme Court right now. And this subject matter is also very present in Texas, and it's kind of this question of the connection of groundwater to surface water. So here you have a point source contaminant going through groundwater and exiting to a navigable water of the U.S. So asking, is this intertransmission enough to where we have to require a permit under the Clean Water Act? So it's going to have some implications, and the analysis will have implications on groundwater permitting in Texas, particularly if they claim and have this huge connection between the two. And then finally, Mississippi versus Tennessee. I know it says 2015, and y'all are like, this is not a notable case, but kind of what I talked about up here, the trigger point for 2015 means that we will likely see oral arguments in this case soon. But as I describe this, I want y'all to think about Texas and New Mexico. So Mississippi is suing Tennessee because Tennessee Memphis Power and Light has been draining 252 billion gallons of water below their border from their common aquifer, and they're seeking relief for that. So they're basically, and it's like 75 years. Like we're claiming Tennessee has been draining our aquifer for 75 years. So what the Supreme Court is looking at is, A, can Mississippi even sue for this? And does Mississippi have sole sovereign authority over the groundwater in their territory? And if so, are they entitled to damages, injunctions, and relief? So if we in Texas have water law and we govern our water law, New Mexico has water law and they govern their water law, Texas-New Mexico border, especially getting close drainage between states. My next one, I've got a video again, so please have some grace with me real fast. Terminology really does play a huge role, and if you guys want that whole clip by Will Ferrell is completely hilarious, where he introduces a duck who they crossbred with a dirt bike. It's really good. But terminology, particularly in the water world, is playing a really big role in the policy and legal discussion today. So I want to tee this up and tell you a little bit about the Dockham Aquifer. Underneath the Ogallala Aquifer, we have another aquifer resource called the Dockham. Generally speaking, this area outside, generally speaking, is greater than 5,000 TDS, total dissolved solid. Generally speaking, this area is less. The Dockham Aquifer, kind of the bowl of the aquifer where most of the settlement is in this kind of shaded area. So in the High Plains Water District, where all these green dots are, these are all currently permitted, and we've even got some down in Hockley and Cochran, Lubbock, Lamb, but these are currently permitted wells in the Dockham, and these on the right are our current observation wells in the Dockham. So I want to break this down a little bit and set this conversation up for you guys. So brackish is generally defined, and this general definition comes from a Texas Water Development Board report in 1995, but it's water containing a TDS between 1,000 and 10,000 milligrams per liter. Once you get past that, it's saline. You're getting up to seawater, twice as salty as seawater. And then we're also going to talk about produced water, so water coming from the ground that is not necessarily fresh water either. We had two pieces of legislation this session that dealt with these types of groundwater, so we'll dive in there. But before we do, I know it kind of sounds elementary, but we got to break it down to be able to talk about it. Groundwater, as you all know, is a real property right in Texas that goes with the surface estate. Landowners own the groundwater below their land. We got that in 2012 in the Day decision. But what is groundwater? So groundwater is water percolating below the surface of the earth. Okay, well, percolating, that's kind of a, like I think of a bubble or a percolator. Well, what is percolating? Well, legally speaking, percolating means underground water capable of being obtained by a well. So when you're talking about water, and regardless of the salinity, generally speaking, it's if you can pull water and suck it up out of the ground from a well, that is groundwater that's owned by the surface owner. There's only one Texas Supreme Court case that discusses the ownership of groundwater in relation to salinity. And in that case, it said salinity literally bore no consequence as to the ownership. So no matter how saline it is, the groundwater below your land is owned by the landowner, the surface owner. So we had two pieces of legislation. And I say this, my total clause on this, I have nothing against Chairman Larson. Chairman Larson is from San Antonio. One of his biggest constituents is the San Antonio Water Systems. They have an amazing brackish desal facility that they use. And you think of San Antonio, they've got tons of rivers and reservoirs all around them, but San Antonio is actually 100% dependent on groundwater. So he has interest in making sure that there's legislation that facilitates large groundwater production to be used, to be cleaned up for urban use. So what House Bill 722 did was it had a statewide mandatory permitting process for brackish groundwater production zones. Just kind of tee this up a little bit further, and you got to follow me here. Brackish groundwater production zones were legislatively mandated to be designated a couple sessions ago. So the Water Development Board is studying all major and minor aquifers in the state, and they look at a huge criteria of information in designating these zones. But generally speaking, from what the criteria says, we theoretically could potentially have a zone within this area. But I also point to you, we don't have any data in this area either. So what he's saying is if there is a brackish groundwater production zone, no matter what groundwater conservation district you are, you have to have this specific permitting process. So the High Plains Water District looked at this piece of legislation and said, well, first off, the permitting process in this bill is more restrictive than what we as a district operate. So for example, say we theoretically get a zone down here somewhere, Littlefield or Morton, but Hockley, Tulia, Hereford, Canyon all produce water out of the same aquifer. The people down south would be subject to a more strenuous and completely different permitting process than the people up north. The High Plains Water District said that's not right. Our landowners prefer our rules. They don't want more stringent rules put upon them. And we're constantly told as a groundwater district to treat landowners fairly. We were very public with this with Chairman Larson. He agreed to work with us on this. And so we did not. There's an exemption in the bill that exempts a district that overlies wholly or partly 10 or more counties over the Dockum. So the High Plains Water District is exempt. We're exempt from it. So I think, y'all, this is just kind of a big step in recognition of a groundwater district saying, hey, landowners own the groundwater below their land regardless of the salinity. Additionally speaking, the Water Development Board is still currently studying the Dockum, and we are working with them on those efforts as well. And then the other piece of legislation that came up that involves this idea of treating a groundwater property interest differently through policy regulation versus the ownership side is House Bill 3246 by Darby. And I worked for Darby for two sessions. He's an amazing guy, very landowner friendly. This piece of legislation, though, is one that landowners, particularly those with oil and gas operations on their ag production land, need to be aware of. But what this one said is when you produce water in an oil and gas operation, unless it's otherwise agreed to in a lease, severance document, something, it is the ownership of the mineral interest owner. So it is the ownership of the oil and gas company. So unless otherwise agreed to in the severance document or the lease negotiations. So basically, when you produce oil, generally speaking, for every one barrel of oil you produce four barrels of water. We've got a lot of produced water going on in the Midland area. This is going to come up in the interim discussion, is how can we clean this produced water up and actually use it? I was at a produced water conference back early August, and there's some amazing technology, you guys, especially taking produced water, cleaning it up for ag production. So this In light of that, in light of the technology transitions, landowners need to be aware, hey, maybe it's a prime opportunity for you to talk with your oil and gas company that has the lease on your land to maybe see if you can negotiate some ownership interest in the produced water that comes out of the production. So I say all this to bring it back to this kind of policy discussion, and this goes into the discussion that we had when we were talking about the city of Lochne, is are we as a state sometimes using legislation and policy and regulation to greater increase or decrease a property right? You own the groundwater below your land, but unless you take active action, and theoretically it's groundwater. It comes up through a well, it's percolating, and it may not be pretty. It may need a little bit of work to be done on it, but you still own it. So are we increasing or decreasing our property rights through policy and legislation? So with that, no one's sleeping. Yay. Y'all made it through a law and policy and didn't sleep on me. I'm happy to take any questions y'all may have. Yes, sir. Senator Lucio is from the Brownsville area. And understandably speaking, Texas Rural Water Association and the constituencies that we serve, I put in a request for them, and they are within the High Plains Water District, 16 counties. There's only two member units that are a part of their association. Now, Representative Lucio, down where he's at, particularly in the valley, that's kind of one of their major water suppliers. All these little colonias and communities have these rural water supply associations. They don't have a ton of tax base. They don't have a ton of availability to purchase groundwater. So he's trying to find a way for them to be able to increase their groundwater resources.